हरिः ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 69, Chapter 88, Canto 10. The personality of Godhead continued. A person who has thus become sober fully realizes the absolute as the highest truth, the most subtle and perfect manifestation of spirit, the transcendental existence without end. In this way, realizing that the supreme truth is the foundation of his own existence, he is freed from the cycle of material life. Because I am difficult to worship, people generally avoid me and instead worship other deities who are quickly satisfied. When people receive kingly opulences from these deities, they become arrogant, intoxicated with pride, and neglectful of their duties. They dare to offend even the demigods who have bestowed benedictions upon them. Huh? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and others are able to curse or bless one. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are very quick to curse or bestow benedictions, my dear king. But the infallible Supreme Lord is not. In this connection, an ancient historical account is related concerning how the Lord of Kailash Mountain was put into danger by offering a choice of benedictions to the demon Vrika. Verses 14 to 40. The demon named Vrika, a son of Shakunis, once met Narada on the road. The wicked fellow asked him which of the three chief gods could be pleased most quickly. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, The Lord has said the following. The devatas are easily satisfied without considering the consequences of giving. All perfection arises, however, by the strength of surrender to the Lord. The Lord is not easily worshipped, but considers very well the consequences in giving. And the Lord always accepts those who take shelter of him. Sukadeva will now tell the story to illustrate this. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and others, like Indra, are capable of giving curses or giving benedictions. O King, Anga, this is true. The Lord who does not deviate from his qualities does not readily curse and bless. Right? We take it that do something wrong, he'll immediately get the result one way or the other. But it's not like that with Krishna. Krishna will consider, you know, what's the best thing to do. Because the idea is how to elevate the living entity back to the spiritual position. Right? While the demigods and others, they're simply dealing with the request at hand and the qualification of the person.
Can we also add that they are independent and the Lord is independent?
Yes, of course. It means ultimately the Lord has to sanction what they do, but I mean, he is super soul, that's he and the material energy are taking care of that. So that's happening above even the demigods and stuff. But the idea is that the others will just see what's happening. You deal nicely, they're happy. You don't deal nicely, they get upset. But if that was the case with Vishnu, we've come to the material world and forgotten him. Are we dealing nicely? So would there be any... So how do we rectify that? You understand? So that's the point, is he doesn't act in that way. So he's not easily angered or easily, you know, ready to give the blessings. It means whatever... Because the blessing, what blessings are we looking for? Material facility. So if he gives, what will be the effect? Yeah, while the demigods, they don't consider that. They just give, you worship them, you get your benefit. You understand? But the problem is as is pointed out, then all bad qualities come up and they become even in a worse position. Does that make sense? Yeah. So Krishna is very careful about that, to see that one will advance. So giving or not giving, what will be the effect on you advancing?
He considers that to all living entity, or only this consideration comes to the devotee?
It's specifically the devotees, but I mean, who's worshipping Vishnu? The devotees, yeah.
But those who don't?
Don't worship
Krishna. They don't worship anybody, like Edis, whatever we see around.
Then it's then whatever form that they are surrendered to the Lord in. You know, so let's say an atheist, so they're either interested in, you know, the intellectual freedoms or the sensual freedoms, you know, economic or something. But are they applying themselves well to that area? Are they following the rules of that area? So if they follow the rules of nature concerning the area of their focus, then they can get results there. But if they don't, then why would they get results? Does that make sense? Yeah. Vrika met Narada on the road and without intelligence inquired from him. His question revealed his evil nature on meeting the great devotee and his total ignorance of proper behavior. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book. Because you meet Narad Muni and then you ask him just who's going to be pleased quicker so I can get material benefits sooner. You know, that's like... Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
This can happen. This can happen in our daily life.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yes. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are very easily satisfied, but also very easily angered. When satisfied, they give benedictions without consideration, and when angry, they curse the devotee without consideration. But Lord Vishnu is not like that. Lord Vishnu is very considerate. Whenever a devotee wants something from Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu first considers whether such a benediction will ultimately be good for the devotee. Mm-hmm. Lord Vishnu never bestows any benediction which will ultimately prove disastrous to the devotee. By his transcendental nature, he is always merciful. Therefore, before giving any benediction, he considers whether it will prove beneficial for the devotee. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So Maharaj, you are between the Lord and the devotees.
Between the Lord and the devotees.
That is the real relationship with demigods and his
devotees. Means relationship with the Lord and with the Lord's devotees, that's real. And relationship with anybody else on any other platform is not real.
Yeah, demigods and their devotees. That relationship is not real because...
But why are you approaching the demigods? You're approaching them because they're great devotees and so you're asking them for pure devotion?
Yeah, because devotees in the community usually say that we should worship Lord Shiva also to ask for pure devotion service. So then,
ask your question. Don't give this whole history. What was it? What was the discussion? Ask the question. Don't give the background. You know what I'm saying? Ask the question, or if need, then we can clarify. But here is that you're starting off generic, all demigods. Then when I say, okay, no, but Lord Shiva, why don't you just start off and say, but now many devotees worship Lord Shiva, you know, to get pure devotion. Is that all right? Or how does that work? That's the question. Yeah, but start with that. Otherwise, then we waste a huge amount of time with these kind of questions. I mean, huge. Right? See, the point is Lord Shiva, as a Vaishnav, then you're not worshipping as a demigod. So we don't do demigod worship. But he's a devotee. We're worshipping in that capacity. So it's two different things. Right? Yeah. Narada told him, worship Lord Shiva and you will soon achieve success. He quickly becomes pleased by seeing his worshipper's slightest good qualities and quickly angered by seeing his slightest fault. He becomes pleased with ten-headed Ravana and also with Pana. when they each chanted his glories, like bards in a royal court. Lord Shiva then bestowed unprecedented power upon each of them, but in both cases, he was consequently beset with great difficulty. So in other words, you'll get, but there's always a problem that comes up with that. You know, Lord Shiva gets into problem and Srila Prabhupada writes a Krishna book. Because the great sage Narada was aware of the nature of the demon Vrikasura, he did not advise him to approach Vishnu or Lord Brahma. Persons such as Vrikasura, who are situated in the material mode of ignorance, cannot stick to the worship of Vishnu. Right? Because they won't see the benefit coming. Like, you know, like, we see less of the questions, but we've had questions come up. No, but, you know, someone's been chanting for 20 years, 30 years, you know, when's it going to happen? When does it happen? Like that. So that's why it said they cannot stick, right? So the point is, if you're materialistic, you can't stick to it. If you start materialistic and then from the process that goes down, you can stick to it. So that's what Krishna considers. What to give so that you'll stick to the process. Because if you just get facility, one will go away.
Yes.
Like that. You understand? It's because it's almost there. You know, it's like, why does the donkey keep walking? It's almost there. So that donkey side of us, then it's almost there. Because if you get it, then will the donkey walk? No. But it's that you can come there, push them, kick them, they won't move. They're happy. They're good. Like that. In Vrindavan, I think Sarabi Maharaj was saying when they built the Krishna Balaram temple and they were doing the foundation. So, like here, it's just people put the dirt on their head and walk off with it. Right? But in those days, you put it on a donkey and they moved it. You know? I guess there's more donkeys over there or something. I'm not sure. But. And so then, but in the morning, in the winter, it was cold. The donkeys wouldn't move. You could come, push them, do this, hit them with a stick. It didn't matter. They would not move. And so then the solution was is you build a fire under them. And then only when there's a fire going, then they'll move. And once they move, then you can keep them going. But that initial, they just won't go. So that's the whole point is they were so stubborn, we won't take up service to Krishna. So therefore, a little fire, you know, in the way of some problem, some misery, and then we'll surrender. Yeah. And then if we get our benefit, then back to just standing there.
That's why samsara of constant fire is required.
Yeah, that's why he sees some as constant fires, yes. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus advised, the demon proceeded to worship Lord Shiva at Kedarnath by taking pieces of flesh from his own body and offering them as oblations into the sacred fire, which is Lord Shiva's mouth. Vrikasura became frustrated after failing to obtain a vision of the Lord, right? And even though it's so quick, he's still getting frustrated. That's why he recommended Shiva, because otherwise he's not even going to get anywhere. Finally, on the seventh day, right? There's something about the seventh day, right? After dipping his hair into the holy waters at Kedarnath and leaving it wet, he took up a hatchet and prepared to cut off his head. But at that very moment, the supremely merciful Lord Shiva rose up out of the sacrificial fire, looking like the god of fire himself, and grabbed both arms of the demon to stop him from killing himself, just as we would do. By Lord Shiva's touch, Vrikasura once again became whole, right? So whatever pieces he cut off, then that became whole. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. In complete contrast to this sacrifice on the mode of ignorance, the arch of vidhi process for worshipping Lord Vishnu or Krishna is very simple. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he accepts from his devotees even a little fruit, flower, or some water, which can be gathered by any person, rich or poor. Right? So it's not that this is what he's asking for. He means anybody can get this. So if you're poor, then it's enough. If you're rich, you would offer this and whatever more you can. Right? Of course, those who are rich are not expected to offer only a little water, a little piece of fruit, or a little leaf to the Lord. Right? Because some say, no, but Krishna says leaf, fruit, that's what we're supposed to offer. We shouldn't offer more than that. Like that. But Prabhupada here, you know, makes that point very clear. Also in Gita and Nectar Devotion, but also when it says that you should offer things to the Lord, You know, that says it should be according to position, not that the rich man just offers something simple also. A rich man should offer according to his position. But if the devotee happens to be a very poor man, the Lord will accept even the most meager offering. The worship of Lord Vishnu or Krishna is very simple, and it can be executed by anyone in this world. A devotee does not worship Vishnu or Krishna for any benediction. Therefore, a devotee is called akama, free from desire, free of desire. And a non-devotee is called sarvakama, or desirous of everything. You know, like that, when you saw that decal, all they want is everything. When the demon was prepared to cut off his head, Lord Shiva became very compassionate. This compassion is a symptom of the quality of goodness. Lord Shiva is called, so that's a symptom of goodness, then there's pure goodness. Right? So you have to make sure that it's not seen as the same. Now, it's natural that these things, those in pure goodness, then pure goodness means it's actual goodness, they'll have that compassion. So it's in that surrender to the Lord that one has that compassion for preaching and doing these other things.
Yes.
Right? But it's compassion connected to the Lord. What we see here in the mode of goodness is compassion, but it's not. Yes. Right? Because there's going to be no benefit for anybody from this benediction, other than we get the benefit by seeing the position of what's happening. But Lord Shiva only suffered from this, and Vrikasura, it didn't really work out great for him. Lord Shiva is called Trilinga, a mixture of the three material qualities. Therefore, his manifestation of the nature of compassion is a sign of the quality of goodness. This compassion, however, is present in every living entity. The compassion of Lord Shiva was aroused not because the demon was offering his flesh into the sacrificial fire, but because he was about to commit suicide, right? To the other part, he's not impressed. You know, but he is compassionate to save him. Does that make sense? So it's inherent in all living entities.
Mm.
You know, this is how you deal in all these things. What's the righteous, proper behavior? So then compassion, therefore, is a natural quality in the living entity.
Yes.
This is natural compassion. Even a common man sees someone preparing to commit suicide, he will try to save him. He does so automatically. There's no need to appeal to him. Therefore, when Lord Shiva appeared from the fire to check the demon from suicide, it was not done as a very great favor to him. Right? So in other words, it's something everybody would do, so it's not that it was so special and he was so impressed. It was just out of compassion. Because we might think, oh, it's such a serious offering, so Lord Shiva is so impressed. No, it's just a natural thing of compassion that you're going to, you know, try to save someone's life. That's just normally what it goes. So it wasn't that great of a favor. Lord Shiva said to him, My friend, please stop. Ask me whatever you want, and I will bestow that boon upon you. Alas, you have subjected your body to great torment for no reason, since I am pleased with a simple offering of water from those who approach me for shelter. Right? Because you see, when they do worship of Lord Shiva, they just put the pot with the water dripping on it, or you just bring some Ganga water, that port, Nalinga, maybe some bilba leaves. That's it. You don't have to do this kind of offering. Right, you know, yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the benediction sinful Vrika chose from the Lord would terrify all living beings. Vrika said, may death come to whomever I touch upon the head with my hand. Upon hearing this, Lord Rudra seemed somewhat disturbed. Nonetheless, O descendant of Bharata, he vibrated Om to signify his assent, granting Vrika the benediction with an ironic smile, as if giving milk to a poisonous snake. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, hearing this, Shiva seemed to be aggrieved, but he also knew that the Lord would find some remedy. Thus he smiled in his aggrieved condition, understanding that the Lord was omniscient. He now understood his own foolishness. Right? So he understood that he, in his position, isn't on the level of Vishnu. He's foolish. But even though he's foolish, because Vishnu is there, he will take care of everything and all that. But that means you surrender. It's not that he just goes off and just leaves it. He surrendered to the Lord. So then,
Lord Shiva considered foolishness as a devotee, but as a demigod, he was obliged, wasn't he?
You're not obliged to give something that's not worthwhile. Means if you promise something, but what someone asks is not correct, you're under zero obligation. People say, no, no, but you promise. But it has to be something proper. That's why you see is when that you have those who ask for a particular benediction, so it's obvious what you're getting involved in. But also you see many times you see that people just, they want you to agree to something without you knowing what it is. And so you see like someone like Arjuna or that, we're very, you know, they'll only do what's proper. They'll say, if it's within my power, it's not against the rules, and it's not something that will, you know, be bad for himself, you know, which you can't ask for somebody. And so you say, then I will do. And so then, now, it's up to the other person. They accept that, then they can ask. And if it's one of those three, then they can't ask. If they ask, you won't fulfill it, so. So this idea is that, no, you have to, because you said, no, it has to be within the laws, the proper laws. But it's appropriate. It's within the laws, it's something that they can have a duty to do, they have the ability to do, and it's not going to be a problem for the person. Then that's the confines within it. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, instead of surrendering unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Duskritis worship different demigods to derive abominable material benefits. Although the Duskritis have brain power and merit, their merit and brain power are used for abominable activities. Sometimes, for example, materialistic scientists invent a lethal weapon. The scientific research for such an invention certainly requires a very good brain. But instead of inventing something beneficial to human society, they invent something to accelerate death, which is already assured to every man. It means everybody's going to die. And so then they figure out a way to make everyone die quicker. And so somehow or another, this is considered a benefit. I even think the person or group's got a Nobel Prize, right? You know? Probably even Nobel Peace Prize. They cannot show their meritorious power by inventing something which can save man from death. Instead, they invent weapons which accelerate the process of death. Similarly, Vrikasura, instead of asking Lord Shiva for something beneficial to human society, asks for something very dangerous to human society. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, to test Lord Shambhu's benediction, the demon then tried to put his hand on the Lord's head. Thus Shiva was frightened because of what he himself had done. As the demon pursued him, Lord Shiva fled swiftly from his abode in the north, shaking with terror. He ran as far as the limits of the earth, the sky, and the corners of the universe. The great demigods could only remain silent, not knowing how to counteract the benediction, because whoever steps in, he just has touched their head, right? Then Lord Shiva reached the luminous realm of Vaikuntha, beyond all darkness, where the Supreme Lord Narayan is manifest. That realm is the destination of renunciates who have attained peace and given up all violence against other creatures. Going there, one never returns. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, it is said in the Shastras that residential quarters within the forest are in the mode of goodness. Residential quarters in the big cities, towns, and villages are in the mode of passion. And residential quarters in an atmosphere where indulgence in the four sinful activities of illicit sex, intoxication, meat-eating, and gambling predominates are in the mode of ignorance. But residential quarters in a temple of Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, are in Vaikuntha. It doesn't matter where the temple is situated. The temple itself, wherever it may be, is Vaikuntha. Similarly, the Svetadvipa planet, although within the material jurisdiction, is Vaikuntha. Right, so he means he's going to Kiradakshai Vishnu's place. Because otherwise, how does Vrika go there? Right, can't go. Just like Ardhuvasa Muni, he goes to Vaikuntha, means he went to Svetadvipa.
Like that. Here, Lord Shiva has given a benediction, and then he is unable to counteract that. It's difficult to understand that.
Why is it difficult to understand?
By his power only that...
So he should... So then, if his head doesn't crack, did he give a benediction?
No.
If the demon touches Lord Shiva's head and Lord Shiva's head doesn't crack, has Lord Shiva given him the benediction?
No.
So he gave him the benediction. You know, yes, they have to stick by their word. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The Supreme Lord who relieves his devotees' distress had seen from afar that Lord Shiva was in danger. Thus, by his mystic yogamaya potency, he assumed the form of a brahmachari student with the appropriate belt, deerskin, rod, and prayer beads, and came before Vrikasura. The Lord's effulgence glowed brilliantly like fire. Holding kusa grass in his hand, he humbly greeted the demon. The Supreme Lord said, 'My dear son of Shakuni, you appear tired. Why have you come such a great distance? Please rest for a minute. After all, it is one's body that fulfills all one's desires,'" right? So if you push the body too much, then how are you going to, you know, accomplish what you want to accomplish, right? Because if you rest, then he's not chasing after Shiva or anybody else, right? Oh, mighty one, please tell us what you intend to do, if we are qualified to hear it. Usually one accomplishes his purposes by taking help from others, right? So you want to get something done, you do it by working with others. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, "This body, Atma, fulfills all our desires, Sarva, Kama, Dukkha. Therefore do not give the body pain by exhausting it with running." Right? So if there's no need, then why be involved? Because it's if you're doing your service, then you take the, you'll get tired. But then, you know, at night you rest, the next day you'll be ready. But you don't take it beyond what you can do so that the next day you can't do service, right? Does that make sense? You know, unless it's an emergency. But otherwise, that's the general point. Sukadev Goswami said, but here he's just doing, you know, as etiquette, being nice, being hospitable, then it stops the demons, right? Sukadeva Goswami said, "Thus questioned by the personality of Godhead in language that poured down upon him like sweet nectar," right, because it's very nicely stated, "Rika felt relieved of his fatigue. He described to the Lord everything he had done," right, so he felt so good from this, then he wanted to talk to the Lord. Otherwise, you know, you're running all over the universe, right, you know, so.
So now he appreciates the Lord.
Yeah, he appreciates.
Can we say it's like starting the devotional service?
Yeah. Some Igyata Sukriti, yes. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, "Asked by the Lord with words which showered like nectar, Vrika felt relieved. He was pleased with relief from his fatigue. Even though the Lord spoke with other intentions, his innate spiritual qualities did not decrease." Right, because it's for a spiritual benefit. It's got a higher purpose. So it's not that, because he's speaking, he's being nice and all that, but it's actually about how to, you know, stop the demon. It's not that the Lord would get any, you know, reduction in his glories. Right? The Supreme Lord said, "If this is the case, we cannot believe what Shiva says." So he told them all about how he did this and he got the benediction and all that. He says, "If this is the case, this is what you're doing and why you're not, we cannot believe that what Shiva says. Shiva is the same Lord of the Pretas and Pisachas whom Daksha cursed to become like a carnivorous hobgoblin." Right? So, you know, because these are all his associates. So, you know, I mean, this is what he's done. Now that's the thing. He's cursed him like that. What's the point? It doesn't have to happen. But, you know, yeah. "Oh, best of the demons, if you have any faith in him because he is the spiritual master of the universe, then without delay, put your hand on your head and see what happens. The words of Lord Shamba prove untrue in any way, O best of the demons, then kill the liar so he may never lie again." Right? Just so cleverly he, you know, at the same time as he said these things, that's true. He's the Lord of the Pratyas and Pichachas, but that's his glory. And Daksha cursed him, but it didn't happen. But by putting it in these contexts, then he's thinking, oh yeah, you can't. So if you have any faith, then go ahead, put it on his. So what he's basically meaning is, how can you have faith in this guy? You know? So, you know, it's useless. But if you have faith, go ahead, put it on your head. Then you can see if it's true or not. You know, in other words, you know, it's just using the reverse psychology. There. And then if it's not true, then you can go and chastise him. He doesn't say, what if it is true? Like that, you know. That's the whole point of the demons. They don't look at all the points. So. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, The demon was greatly pacified by the sweet words of Lord Narayana in the form of a brahmachari, and at last he disclosed all that had happened in regard to the benediction offered by Lord Shiva. The Lord replied to the demon as follows: I myself cannot believe that Lord Shiva has in truth given you such a benediction. As far as I know, Lord Shiva is not in a sane mental condition, right? Because that's what's meant by him being this hobgoblin. When he had a quarrel with his father-in-law, Daksha, he was cursed to become a pisach, ghost. Thus he has become the father of the leader of the ghosts and hobgoblins. Therefore, I cannot put any faith in his words. But if you still have faith in the words of Lord Shiva, my dear king of the demons, then why don't you make an experiment by putting your hand on your own head? The benediction proves false, then you can at once kill this liar, Lord Shiva, so that in the future he will not dare give out false benedictions. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus bewildered by the personality of God, his enchanting, artful words, foolish Vrikasura, without realizing what he was doing, placed his hand on his head. Instantly his head shattered as if struck by a lightning bolt, and the demon fell down dead. From the sky were heard cries of victory, obeisances, and well done. The celestial sages, Pitas, and Gandharvas rained down flowers to celebrate the killing of sinful Vrikasura. Now Lord Shiva was out of danger. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then addressed Lord Girisha, who was now out of danger. Just see, O Mahadev, my Lord, how this wicked man has been killed by his own sinful reactions. Indeed, what living being can hope for good fortune if he offends exalted saints? Right? What to speak of offending the Lord and spiritual master of the universe? Right? So, great saints, if you offend, it's a big problem. And then let alone someone like Lord Shiva, who's the spiritual master of the whole universe. Right? So that's the whole main thing. But otherwise, him touching this or that, Maya can take care of this, as we said. Right? Lord Hari is the directly manifest absolute truth, the supreme supersoul and unlimited ocean of inconceivable energies. Anyone who recites or hears this pastime of his saving Lord Shiva will be freed from all enemies and the repetition of birth and death. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Thus Lord Vishnu, in the form of a brahmachari, released Lord Shiva from the impending danger and saved the whole situation. Lord Narayana then informed Lord Shiva that this demon, Vrikasura, was killed by the result of his sinful activities, right? Because he had offended, you know, such a great Vaishnava. That's what he was, why he was killed. He was especially sinful and offensive because he wanted to experiment on his own master, Lord Shiva. Lord Narayana then told Lord Shiva, my dear Lord, a person who commits an offense to great souls cannot continue to exist. He is vanquished by his own sinful activities. And this is certainly true of this demon, who has committed such an offensive act against you. Right? So then, appreciating this, you see, through its own light, that way one freed from all enemies and the repetition of birth and death. Right? So now, that's the context. So what would this mean? Right? What kind of enemies are we talking about if you're freed from the repetition of birth and death?
Enemies of heart. Lust, anger,
and... Yes, that's your specific, these six enemies. Lust, anger, greed, envy, attachment, illusion, madness, like this. This is the ones. Because these others, your being freed from birth and death is not dependent upon them going away. Right? Was it only after Duryodhana was killed that now the Pandavas are free to, you know, go to the transcendental realm? No, they're always situated there. You understand? So it's just a matter of that one will be free from all this. It may also take the form of external enemies.
Yes.
But the point is it will still be rectified in a way that one becomes more Krishna conscious. Because what's the point of enemies going away and then turning to the Lord, if when going away you stop turning to the Lord? So it has to be them going away means you are more surrendered to Krishna.
Yes.
So if you just surrender to Krishna, whether they're there or not won't bother you. And so if they go away, nice. And if they don't go away, then you're still surrendered. Does that make sense? But in any case, Krishna removes the obstacles. Conclusion. One can approach the transcendental region only by worshipping Lord Krishna, not Shiva or Brahma or any other demigod. Right? So it's hearing this pastime because of the aspect of Lord Vishnu and how he took care of it. That's what's going to relieve you from. Right? Because Lord Shiva is seen in his natural position, Lord Vishnu and all that, and the demon and theirs. But if we just only hear about Lord Shiva in the pastime there, then we won't get as good a benefit. If it doesn't have the aspect of Vishnu and how he saves the devotees and how offending great Vaishnavas is a problem. The devotees of Lord Shiva are opulent only in terms of the material qualities. Factually, such so-called advancement of civilization is the cause of entanglement in material existence. It is actually not advancement, but degradation, right? Because they stay in the material world, so how much benefit are they actually getting? Favors received from Lord Shiva are not actually beneficial to the conditioned souls, right? Didn't work out so great for Rika, right? Although materially such facilities seem opulent, right? You may get all facilities, but it doesn't maintain the Krishna consciousness, as Krishna pointed out. One can get very proud. We see that happen so many times. Like, you know, somebody's there, they're doing so much service and this and that, and they're trying to do something like that, make a little money and all that. Then they start making huge amounts of money. How much do you see them at the temple? Yeah. So then what's happening? So is that really good? But if that's what they really want, then Krishna may take care of it. But then the problem is that they go away. And then when things don't work out so good, or this or that, or, you know, something, they get too old, they can't spend the money, they can't enjoy the money, you know, the family's grown up or left them, or a business starts to fail, then you might see them start coming back to the temple. Right? Yeah. Lord Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. One who worships him becomes similarly freed from the material modes. By worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, instead of being puffed up with the material opulence, one becomes enriched with spiritual advancement of knowledge in Krishna consciousness. So that's the difference. One gets facilities of the modes and gets entangled by the modes. One gets liberated from the modes. When a devotee falls into a miserable condition or becomes materially opulent, it is not due to past impious or pious activities. Right? In other words, when you want it, basically it'll be hard to get. And when you don't want it, if you have the nature, then you can use it in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? That's the way it works.
It's a new system.
Yes, it's new to us. Yes. It's new to us. This arrangement.
Without actually accepting this. We can say new approach, you know, we cannot surrender.
Yes. Yeah. It's a whole different perspective, because whatever perspective we've used in karma and jnana, and there's a good chance we've used all of them, yes. We're still here. Yes. And yes. So now it's time to try a bit of an alternative. Yes. Which, for here is an alternative, but is the standard mentality in yes. the spiritual world. Yes. Like that. So we may see it as a minority, like we see the devotees and what they do is a minority, but there's actually, in living entities, there's unlimitedly more devotees than there are non-devotees. Like that. You know, so it's... Yeah. This arrangement is especially made by Krishna for his devotee just to make him completely dependent upon him and to free him from all material obligations. Okay, so that's the point, is material obligation. You may have spiritual obligations. You do your duties to please Krishna. That's spiritual. Usually maybe indirect, but it's still spiritual activities. But if you're doing it because of material attachment, then you have to do the duties. Those are obligations. So it frees you from those material obligations. So that may take the form of you're not doing those things. And because of that, then you're remembering the Lord. Or because you're remembering the Lord, you may have those things, but they're still not material designations. You don't get the material benefit. You understand? Yeah. Therefore, the karmis and devotees are not on the same level. In whatever condition of life the karma may be, he continues in the cycle of birth and death because the seeds of karma is there. And it fructifies. Oh, seed, okay. And the seed of karma is there, and it fructifies whenever there is an opportunity. So, the seed will be there, and when there's an opportunity, then you'll have that desire, it will sprout. Mm-hmm. And then it's just a matter of time. Mm-hmm. A devotee's distress and happiness not being under the laws of karma are part of a temporary arrangement by the Supreme Lord, which does not entangle the devotee. Right? So the distress and happiness, those are temporary, because whatever it is, they're in connection with what's happening here in the world. Mm-hmm. Right? Because what's in connection with devotional service, we don't call that happiness or distress. Does that make sense? Like engaging the senses in Krishna's service, we don't call sense gratification. So when we say happiness, distress, we mean material. Like that. So it's a temporary situation. Right? Because it's only going to be there for a certain amount of time. You know, limit this body. So makes sense? Yeah. And so then it's there. So and this point of getting facilities or losing facilities, who's going to be the most happy or distressed by this process? The neophyte, the uttama, the madhyama. The neophyte. So in other words, this process is all devotees. Yes. Right? It's not that, only the advanced devotees, then Krishna's taking care and it's Krishna karma. No, it's all devotees. Yes. So it's a temporary arrangement by the Supreme Lord, which does not entangle the devotee. So he'll fulfill in such a way that you won't get entangled. Mm-hmm. So that means either you see how to engage it in the Lord's service and move forward that way, or you see how this is not very useful for the Lord's service and lose interest and give it up. Right? So depending upon whether it's your nature, whether it's a proper facility, or whether it's the appropriate time. You know what I'm saying? Just like an example comes to mind is when Prabhupada was here, because Hridayananda Maharaj is so smart then, and we were dealing, you know, there was Sanskrit and things like that, then he went out and he found a whole bunch of books in Sanskrit, a whole stack of them, and he was all excited. He went to Prabhupada and said, you know, he got all these books and studied Sanskrit, and Prabhupada just said, no, you don't worry about that, you know, you read my books and what you pick up from the word for word and all this, and that's enough. You know, you just preach, right? Because he was already a sannyasin preacher at that time. So then he went back to his room, and you know how you have your table, and next to the table you have your garbage, you know, your garbage or dustbin. He just slid the books off the end of the table so they dropped into the garbage. That was it. No questions. That was it. Right? So at that time, it would have been a distraction. Because he would have been spending all that time studying the Sanskrit instead of preaching. Right? Does that make sense? But then we see later on, then he's the one that's involved in translating the books. You know, meaning he knows Sanskrit. So the point, when you know how to use it, then it may be there. And when you don't, it won't be there. So that's why it's temporary. These things come and go. Does that make sense? Whether a devotee acts in a so-called pious or impious manner, he is neither elevated nor degraded, but is transferred to the spiritual kingdom. Because why is it going on? He's involved because of his connection to Krishna. And so Krishna arranges these things in such a way that the devotee surrenders. That's why you see is that the whole means from the sixth canto, up to the sixth canto, up to the fifth canto, when this point is not brought up. It may be there, but it won't be caught. It won't be made so obvious as this. Right? But in the sixth canto, it's pointing out prayaschitta actually does nothing. All it does, basically, prayaschitta, what it does is it satisfies anybody who knows about what happened. So in other words, prayaschitta is for quieting gossip. That's all it's for. Means the person does something material, you know, improper, they get a reaction for that. And it's carried out however it is. So it can be a voluntary thing, it'll happen by, you know, whatever it is. The modes of nature will take care. So, it's a reaction. But what's the necessity of that being that the specific punishment and everybody knows about it and that is because everybody who knows about it, then they have the tendency to want justice. They think that one's development and not is based upon the material qualities, because karma is. You do good work, you get good results. You do bad work, you get bad results. So by there being a bad result for this person, then those who tend to be good will avoid it. And those who are bad are going to be punished anyway. Right? So it's very important in the world of karma. But in the world of devotion, what does this do? Bhakti is independent. So even if you've done something, if you surrender to Krishna, then one is on the transcendental platform. And we see as these things being worked out, they're already transcendentally situated. They may not fully appreciate or understand it or act always in that way. But they're on that platform. So they're working in a different thing. Krishna karma means you're not working within the realm of material karma. Does that make sense? Very important to understand, because bhakti is independent from these things. Now if one says, oh, I'm doing devotional service, I can do whatever I want, that's the, you know, what is it, that's the seventh offense for the holy name, you know, commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name, so then that will get a reaction there, so his spiritual life, everything will go down, because now you're taking advantage. But here we're meaning someone is trying to do, but they, due to bad habit and this, they may get distracted. Therefore, whether they're, he's neither elevated or degraded, whether in so-called pious or impious behavior, manner. Mm-hmm. Because in as much as we're saying, no, no, but it's impious, how can, it's also so-called pious. What's the alternative? Because we will point out that one has to be good and nice and all these things, but that's so-called pious. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're saying, you're saying it's pious, but what benefit does it do for the soul? You know what I'm saying? So when we're materially attached to the mundane concept, then we will function in that realm. And so then we'll see is, yes, these things may happen, but it's even Krishna's arranging, it's still according to our attachment to the mundane, and we will get mundane results from it. But at the same time is, because we go through it, Krishna will do it in such a way that we reduce or lose our interest in this. And eventually we get purified, so we give up this attachment to the mundane morality, and that's what's causing bhakti to prosper or degrade. We have to understand bhakti is separate. That doesn't mean devotees are immoral. No, because they're trying to please Krishna, so they follow Shastra. Following Shastra is moral, so then what's the problem? It just means that it's not the morality that makes bhakti work nicely. You understand? Yeah. It's a very important point. If the Supreme Lord is all-powerful, why should he try to reform his devotee by putting him in distress? The answer is that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead puts his devotee in distress, it is not without purpose. Sometimes the purpose is that in distress, the devotee's feelings of attachment to Krishna are magnified. Besides that, it is stated that the sweetness of happiness is sweeter to those who have tasted bitterness. So even you want to get, by not having, then when you do get, like Krishna wants to give, but if you give now, you won't take it seriously.
Yes.
But if there's some distress, then when you do get, then you'll, okay, yeah, then you're, yeah. Does that make sense? You'll take more advantage. Because Krishna's giving, you know, so it's not like, you know, being able to crack people's heads or something. Is that? Yeah? Good? Chapter 89. Krishna and Arjuna retrieve a Brahmin's son. Retrieve a Brahmin's sons. Pratigya. Any opulent position a person may have within this material world is due to Krishna's mercy. Right? So it applies to everybody. And then the devotees will be in a special, because now it's arranged by Krishna himself. While for all others, it's arranged by Krishna through his external energy. It means she takes care of it. She knows what to do. Right? Does that make sense? But it's not that for the devotee, it's that the arrangements of Krishna are not coming through the external energy, but it's under his direction. Does that make sense? His personal direction. But she gets it done. And then we see in some cases, like Prahlad Maharaj and others, he personally does. But still, for the devotees, he arranges through the material energy. Okay? For the devotees. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 89th chapter, the supremacy of Vishnu over Brahma and Shiva is shown through a test by Bhrigu Muni. Right? So we saw in the last chapter already the position of the demigods. Now we'll see further of that. Krishna also takes the sons of a brahmana from the Bauma Purusha. Sardartha Darshani 10.89.1. Once long ago, on the shore of the river Saraswati, a discussion arose among a group of sages as to which of the three chief lords, Brahma, Vishnu, or Shiva, is the greatest. They deputed Bhrigu Muni to investigate the matter. Bhrigu decided to test the Lord's tolerance, but for that quality is a sure sign of greatness. Like Prabhupada mentions that someone who, even you're in a situation of distress and it doesn't bother you, that's a sign of greatness. How much you can deal with that, how you deal properly in that, that's the symptom of it. First, the emphasis, so seeing tolerance, then that's the whole thing. So first he entered the court of Lord Brahma, his father, without offering him any respect. This enraged Brahma, who suppressed his anger because Bhrigu was his son. Right, so we saw before it mentioned that Brahma and Shiva are quickly angered, quickly pleased. So we saw how Shiva was quickly pleased, but it wasn't so much that he was, you know, over the moon pleased. It was just he was trying to be nice pleased. And we see here that Lord Brahma, how he got angry very quickly. So he's just showing these different qualities. Who suppressed his anger because Bhrigu was his son. Next, Bhrigu went to Lord Shiva, his older brother, who rose from his seat to embrace him, but Bhrigu rejected the embrace, calling Shiva a deviant heretic, right? Because how he just doesn't follow the rules, how he's dressed, everything like that. Right? And Bhrigu is you know, the of Brahmins, you consider him the top. So if anybody's in the line of Bhrigu, right, it means if your Gotra is the Bhrigu, then they're considered the best of the groups. So even some of the technical rituals are different for those who follow Bhrigu than they are for other groups. Like that. It's a very special. Just as Shiva was about to kill Bhrigu with his trident, Goddess Parvati interceded and pacified her husband, right? So we see here. So he was easily pleased, easily angry, right? Next, Bhrigu went to Vaikuntha to test Lord Narayana. Going up to the Lord, who was lying with his head on the lap of the Goddess of Fortune, Bhrigu kicked his chest. But instead of becoming angry, both the Lord and his consort stood up and offered Bhrigu respects. "Welcome," said the Lord. "Please sit down and rest a while. Kindly forgive us, dear master, for not noticing your arrival," right? Because he was taking the point. The other two is, you know, okay, Brahma, you know, he's expecting him to, he didn't bow down. Shiva's standing up because he's brothers, like, kind of like equals, so then he's going to, but he didn't reciprocate. And then Vishnu's here, and then when he's coming, then he's taking it, oh, we didn't stand up and receive you and all that. You know? Even though his position is higher than Brahma. Right, Brahma is then superior position, so he's just sitting there. When Bhrigu went back to the assembly of sages and told them all that had happened, they concluded that Lord Vishnu is certainly supreme. Once in Dwarka, a Brahmana's wife gave birth to a son who immediately died. The Brahmana took his dead son to the court of King Ugrasena and berated the king. This duplicitous, greedy enemy of Brahmanas has caused my son's death by failing to execute his duties properly. The same misfortune continued to befall the Brahmana each time he would bring his dead infant's body to the royal court and berate the king. When the ninth son died at birth, Arjuna happened to hear the Brahmana's complaint. And he said, "My lord, I will protect your progeny, and if I fail, I will enter fire to atone for my sin." Sometime later, the Brahmin's wife was about to give birth for the tenth time. When Arjuna learned of this, he went to the maternity house and enveloped it with a protective cage of arrows. Arjuna's efforts were no avail. However, for as soon as the child was born and began to cry, it disappeared into the sky. As the Brahmana profusely derided Arjuna, the warrior set off for the abode of Yamaraj, the king of death. Right, so here we say he's berating. He's saying, well, he's a Brahmin, why he's doing this and that. But the point is the Brahmins are, you know, performing their duties. They're dependent upon their protection for the Kshatriyas. Because they just focus on their duties. So they're dependent upon that. And so then naturally, then they can be upset about it because they're completely committed to that. not that he's trying to find blame elsewhere. You know, it's a matter of that they're dependent. You know, it's just like you're walking with a small child. You take care of them. So if they trip and fall, then in the child's fault, mind, it's your fault. Because you're the one that's always taking care. Why didn't you take care of this?
Chhatriyas are supposed to protect one when somebody attacks.
You protect one when someone attacks. And if no one attacks, then they then just sit there and...
There is no offenses being made to the son. Then how he is putting the blame on the Kshatriya?
Why would the son die before the father? Is that considered a normal thing? So is that a pious thing? Is that an impious thing?
It is karma, Brahman's karma.
But why is this happening in the king's kingdom? Right? Previously, the kingdoms are so... Well, you can see it. It comes up many times in the stories that their rule was so good that there was no disturbance to anyone. Can't remember who, but even in one of the kings, I think maybe it was Ramachandra, the people wouldn't even die if they wouldn't want to. Right? But generally people, they've lived a life, they're older and things like that, it's time to move on. So then it's fine. But if they didn't want, they didn't have to. So everything's so well managed that it works out so perfectly. Does that make sense? So the thing is why is the child dying before? Because the Brahmin knows he's performing his duties and everything, so he's doing his duties. So and he's looking at the king's not doing theirs. Right? So it's a matter of duties. It's not a matter of they're trying to find blame. Right? It means you can look at it, it's our karma and this and that, whatever. But it didn't. He was working on the duties aspect. So they're Brahmins, so we're not worried about it. Right? As the Brahmana profusely derided Arjuna, the warrior set off for the abode of Yamaraj, the king of death. But Arjuna did not find the Brahmin's son there. And even after searching throughout the 14 worlds, he could find no trace of the infant. Having failed to protect the Brahmana's son, Arjuna was now intent on committing suicide by entering the sacrificial fire, or the sacred fire. But just as he was about to do so, Lord Krishna stopped him and said, "I will show you the Brahmana's son. So please don't despise yourself like this." Right? Because he was feeling bad. Like that. Lord Krishna then took Arjuna onto his transcendental chariot. And the two, right, because Arjuna has a celestial chariot, so he can move anywhere in the 14 worlds, but Krishna's is the transcendental. He can go beyond the universe. Lord Krishna then took Arjuna onto his transcendental chariot, and the two of them crossed over the seven universal islands with their seven oceans, passed over the Loka-Loka mountain range, and entered the region of dense darkness. Since the horses could not find their way, Krishna sent his blazing Sudarshan disc ahead to pierce the gloom. Gradually they came to the water of the causal ocean, within which they found the city of Lord Mahavishnu. There they saw the thousand-hooded serpent Ananta, and upon him lay Mahavishnu. The great Lord greeted Sri Krishna and Arjuna, saying, "I brought the Brahmin's sons here simply because I wanted to see the two of you. Please continue to benefit the people in general by exemplifying religious behavior in your forms of Narnarayan Rishi." Right? Because it said that Narnarayan Rishi, they performed their austerities for the benefit of the whole universe. So he wanted to encourage them to continue that. Lord Krishna Arjuna then took the Brahmana's sons, went back to Dwarka, and returned the infants to their father. Having directly experienced the greatness of Sri Krishna, Arjuna was amazed. He concluded that not only by the Lord's mercy can a living entity... He concluded that only by the Lord's mercy can a living being exhibit any power or opulence. Right? So it's not even these demigods, it's only by Krishna's grace this can be done. Because otherwise the whole realm of the demigods, you know, Brahma and Shiva, he can't find. They have no control over this. So Vishnu, he himself does. Right? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.